Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Attention, collectors of vinyl. Have you ever gone into a record store and felt overwhelmed by all the unfamiliar options? Are you frustrated by the constantly increasing prices of classic rock staples? Do you avoid streaming music or long for the days when music was recommended to you by a friend instead of an algorithm? If the answer to any of these questions is yes, then check out I'd Buy That for a Dollar, a podcast about inexpensive, common, and underappreciated records that are waiting to be rediscovered. Each week, hosts Sean, Jeremy, and Peter discuss an album and the artist's history. Previous episodes include selections by the Isley Brothers, the Carpenters, the Doobie Brothers, and Donna Summer, among others. Become a bargain bin pro and impress all your friends with cool music trivia. Listen to I'd Buy That for a Dollar wherever you get your podcasts. Please consider supporting Black Women United, YEG, for the protection and advancement of Black women and girls in Alberta. You can learn more about them at bwunited.ca. They are always looking for donations and volunteers. So please, again, support Black Women United, YEG, for the protection and advancement of Black women and girls in Alberta. Again, that website is bwunited.ca.
This is Dmitry Samarov from Chicago, Illinois, and I love listening to Vish Khanna's Creative Control because whether he's talking to a favorite musician or actor of mine or someone I've never heard of, it's as if he's introducing me to a new friend. And the way things are going, couldn't you use a new friend? Listen now.
To make your flexible monthly donation to Creative Control, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today.
Bill McKay and Nathan Bowles are gifted American multi-instrumentalists who reside in Chicago, Illinois, and Durham, North Carolina, respectively. McKay is primarily known as a guitarist and songwriter, while Bowles plays drums, percussion, clawhammer banjo, and also tends to his own songwriting pursuits. A couple of years after their first encounter, the pair began playing and making music together, and such activities led them into a recording studio to make an album primarily based on a guitar and banjo dynamic, which will see the light of day on April 9th, 2021. The lovely record is called Keys. It comes to us via Drag City Records, and it prompted Bill and Nathan to have a conversation with me about the current state of America during a pandemic, how they began jamming together, their album Keys, its overdubs, and its relationship to a folk tradition, the last time they saw each other, future plans, and much more. A part of the Entertainment One Network with the support of listeners like you who follow and subscribe to this podcast and spread the word about it and make flexible monthly donations at patreon.com/creativecontrol with additional support from Blackbird Music, a well-stocked record store with locations in Edmonton and Calgary, and friendly staff who will happily help you source special orders for hard-to-find titles, which you can learn more about at blackbird.ca, and Massey Hall's concert film series, live at MasseyHall.com, where you can stream dozens of 30-minute films for free, including performances by past and recent podcast guests like Lisa LeBlanc, plus in-kind support from Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton. This is the 607th episode of Creative Control, featuring the lovely and talented Bill McKay and Nathan Bowles, with your host, me, Vish Khanna. Hello, Nathan, Bill, are you there? How's it going?
Hey.
Oh, hey.
What's up?
Hey, what's going on?
It's nice to speak with you both. Bill, it's nice to see you again. Where in the world are you?
You too, Vish. I'm in Chicago, Illinois, in the wild west of the U.S. Not really, in the wild Midwest of the U.S.
That's right.
Yeah. And yeah. Not doing bad. Good to see you again. It's been a minute.
It's been like less than a year. I feel like we chatted not too long ago. You're so prolific that we're catching up again. Or was it more than that? Time is a flat circle for me.
Definitely. Time is very strange. It's like it's a weird new thing, you know?
Yeah.
It feels like around that, like maybe a year.
Maybe.
Or
yeah.
Something.
I can't recall.
An album must go or something.
We should talk at least annually. That's what I think.
Yeah, definitely. I would love that.
And how are things going?
And we should set up the meetings, but like, you know, 5 or 10 years worth, like in advance.
Yeah, I'll put it in the calendar here and it'll just notify us that we're due to meet every year at least for the next 10 years. No, it's nice to see you. Things are okay in Chicago at the moment? Would you say?
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, they're okay. You know, it's like kind of similar to everybody I talk with, like Nathan and probably yourself. And, you know, everybody's got these sort of struggles, these bright days and these very harrowing days, I think. So,
yeah,
but people here have been taking precautions as far as the epidemic goes. And that's been good. You know, most people are pretty concerned about it. And, you know, it's not a sort of a hoaxer kind of area. As far as that all goes, it feels like things are opening a little bit, you know, here and there. As more and more people get vaccinated, it's helping. And, you know, there's just a little bit more seeing your friends and stuff. So
that's good.
We're, you know, I'm feeling kind of hopeful.
Yeah, it's hard to feel.
How about yourself?
Well, we still have.
It is hard.
Yeah, we are slower than you guys on the vaccination train in terms of receiving them. Although, as we're speaking, I believe my father received, well, he lives in Ontario, I live in Alberta. My father received his first dose yesterday, and my mother, as we're speaking, should be getting hers today, the first doses, so that's good.
Oh, great.
So that's helpful. Yeah. it's happening, but for us here in Alberta, we're not, maybe the July, maybe the fall, and so it's a bit of a drag, but I'm sure we'll talk about this a little bit more potentially, or we'll move on with our lives.
Totally.
But I don't want to leave our other friend here hanging. Nathan.
Absolutely.
Nathan, are you there?
Yeah. What's up?
Not much.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. Where in the world are you, Nathan?
I'm in Durham, North Carolina.
Oh.
So, yeah, a little bit east of Bill. I've been living here for about 5 years now or so, maybe a little more.
Okay. Yeah. What brought you to Durham?
I had some music friends who were living here, some job stuff. I was living in the southwestern part of Virginia before then for like 15 years or so, because I went to school there, got a couple degrees there. And so I lived there for quite a long time and did a lot of music stuff there as well. But yeah, some music stuff, some job stuff brought me here, and I really like it.
Yeah, it's a lovely, it's not the first time, but one, I was in North Carolina in that area in like the year 2000. I mean, I've been there a few times, but I was there that year in the fall, and I made the remark that the air tasted sweet. It just smelled sweet and lovely. I don't know if I'm over romanticizing this in my memory banks, but it seemed
not necessarily. In fact, I was just commenting on kind of that the other day with someone. I feel like spring here can be feel a little short. Like there'll be a feeling where it's a little humid outside, but the temperature is in kind of a nice zone and it's breezy, and we'll get that for like a few weeks, and then it's just sort of like hot and muggy from like May until like November.
Yeah.
But I was just commenting to someone the other day that I'll step outside and the air kind of smells sweet. There's definitely like flower smells. It feels breezy. Okay. It feels beachy, you know, even though we're in the center of the state So I don't think you're exaggerating.
My memory is sound. The sensation, I have like a sense memory of like, what is this? Why? It's like a thickness. It's like a syrupy. I'm like, what is this?
Well, yes.
And we were playing, I was road managing a band. So we were in Carrboro and
Sure.
Is that nearby? Yeah. I don't remember. Is
yes.
That, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Like 25 minutes away from me. Yeah. Do you remember where y'all were playing? Or
it was not. I guess what is it? Cat's Cradle? Is that the main sort of hub? Mm-hmm. No, it was like a. I don't remember.
2000.
Yeah.
There's
a
few different options of where it could have been.
We had a weird thing where we had been the band I was road managing had frequently been covering an Elizabeth Cotton song, Freight Train.
Sure.
And then they stopped it for a couple of weeks, and then just randomly Aaron, the lead singer, Aaron Riches of the band Royal City, was like, we're gonna try this song Freight Train by Elizabeth Cotton, and someone yelled, she's from here.
Yeah,
and we're like, what? And we had no idea. It was like, really?
Totally.
So the air was sweet, the tour was haunted, everything about it was weird. I remember it all. It was like magical. It was very bizarre. So that's a magical little area, but also, you have problems. Bill and I were talking about Chicago and not being a hoaxer place, but North Carolina, a little fraught. Is that fair?
It depends. I mean, it depends on where you are, certainly. I mean, the triangle here, you know, the Durham, Raleigh, Chapel Hill area probably feels different in that way to some areas of the states, but it really just depends on where you are. It's hard to like make sweeping statements really about the state.
Yeah,
but I would say, yeah, I mean, kind of similarly to Bill, like COVID stuff here is sort of, we feel, you know, it feels a little optimistic moving forward, but it's harrowing, obviously.
I see.
On that note, too, the it's good to note, too, that Illinois, outside of these megacities, the states themselves can be pretty reactionary outside.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
Other parts of Illinois and stuff, too. So it is like, I was just going to say what Nathan's take on the nuances is really apt, you know?
Yeah. Fair enough. Now, Bill, I know that you are a very, and don't feel embarrassed if I flatter you, but I know you're a very gifted guitar player. Are you okay with that distinction?
Oh yeah. I think that's very nice of you.
you fundamentally, regardless of the, you know, proficiency, whatever, you play guitar. And Nathan, what is your primary instrument if you have one?
It's funny when people ask me that, my gut always wants to say like, well, I'm a percussionist that plays different things. I don't know if we've talked about that, Bill.
Like, no, I don't think so, actually.
But I mean, certainly I would say clawhammer banjo has been a focus of mine for, you know, a little over 10 years now at this point. But I feel like I approach most of the instruments that I play with kind of a percussive mindset. I sort of think in that way. So I think I would still say I consider myself like a percussionist, I guess, although certainly lately I've been focusing on banjo.
Now, when you say percussionist, are you distinguishing that approach to drumming? Are you a drummer or are you a percussionist? Do you play conventional drums and the people would recognize, or are you flying to Tanzania and bringing back some, you know, hand drum or something, and you're a percussionist? What kind of, how would you characterize yourself?
So certainly more of the the first one. I mean, I'm certainly like inspired by a lot of like folk traditions, like in a bunch of my music, obviously, I think. But drum kit is one of the things I started playing fairly young as a kid, along with piano and keyboard stuff. So I think I just approach a lot of my playing, no matter what the instrument is, with kind of the feel and the touch and the vibe I bring to my drum kit playing.
Yeah.
I think everything feels like an extension of that. And I'm not sure that I don't think it like necessarily sounds like that to other people, but it's the way that I kind of approach things when I'm dealing with my hands and my feet, you know.
Yeah, fair enough. Now, a banjo, yeah. If I may, a banjo.
Interesting.
Does mm-hmm. a banjo not have like kind of a drum skin sort of thing on it?
Sure.
Is that, mm-hmm. am I right. misspeaking? So, is it, it's a look like
no,
every banjo not. Looks like a little snare drum that someone happened to put mm-hmm. strings on and an arm. And now, so I wonder if you.
It really
we
does.
Should, we should start calling guitar and banjo necks arms. I think that's funnier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're not necks. They're better. Arms. Yeah. They're arms.
They're
exactly.
arms.
They are.
But no, you're not wrong. You're not wrong. Yeah. I mean, yeah. whether it's a resonator banjo with a closed back or an open back banjo or another instrument that is similar in different folk traditions, yeah, they usually have some kind of membrane. Head, whether it's like an actual skin head, like animal skin head, or some kind of synthetic, you know.
But it's not a
so
you
like
couldn't
banjo I play.
You couldn't go to the store, the music store, and say, "Ah, my banjo head broke. I need a snare drum head." You would get a specific. Could you?
You could, I guess. I mean, I don't see why. I guess you could. I mean, okay. I don't know anyone. I guess I couldn't think. I can't think of anyone who's done that. But I don't see why you maybe couldn't. Although. I guess maybe the way it would attach would be a little different, but it's essentially the same thing. I mean, because different snare drum heads and different drum kit heads are made of different materials.
Yeah, that's
as well.
Right. And yeah.
You know.
I should say I'm something of a drummer. If I have a primary instrument, it's the drums. So,
great.
So yeah, I mean, I'm trying to play guitar more since the pandemic and learn how to do, I'm just never, it's too much work. The guitar, it's a lot. I like, and it's not, I like all my whole body doing stuff, you know, and then like the guitar is just like, I don't know, I can't do it. But it's also hard, and you have to learn the whole, everything on the arm is and does, and you're just like, oh my God, the mental energy, I could just hit the drums and I'd be fine. Anyway, my point is, just so you have some background, I shouldn't say I kind of know about drums, but anyway.
Yeah.
Maybe you were drawn to the banjo because you mistook it for a drum as a percussionist. Maybe that's how you mm-hmm. you were like, oh, I have mm-hmm. kinship with this thing. I'm being reductive, yeah. of course.
No, it's not reductive, and that's kind of accurate. I mean, at the time when I started playing banjo, I'd started playing more traditional, like old-time Appalachian music.
Mm-hmm.
Were based on where I was living in Southwest Virginia, and one of a guy, Mike Gangloff, who's still my bandmate in Pelt and Black Twig Pickers. We were playing improvised music together, and his band Black Twig Pickers had been going for a few years at that point. And I got interested in that music and started doing sort of percussive stuff in that band, mostly like washboard or like washtub bass, which I was kind of playing pretty percussively, I guess. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and then when Mike wanted to move more from banjo to fiddle, I was kind of getting interested in his clawhammer approach to banjo. So, and then when I started, I was trying to apply some of the rhythmic stuff I was doing on washboard and other similar things to the banjo. So, I mean, I was certainly drawn to the instrument because of its percussive qualities and yeah. the kind of percussive specificity of clawhammer yeah. playing. So,
yeah, I can tell you're a drummer because you're whacking your desk. I know everyone can hear that. I do it too. I tap on my desk. Like this. Yeah, when I whack, I gesticulate, and then I whack the table, and then when I'm editing my show, I'm like, ah, you idiot. What are you, not, no offense to you, Nathan. You're a very intelligent man. No. But I'm like, why are you whacking it? Stop it. So I learned the hard way. This whole this remote recording, you learn all these, like, oh, like we just do these little things. Anyway, you're clearly a drummer is all I'm getting at. You're the same as me. You know, a little you want to hit things and whack things in a rhythmic way. It's interesting. I want to go to Bill here. Bill, how Bill, for those who heard our episode, we became familiar with you on the last time you were on the show and your approach to music and life and all these things. I want to ask you a little bit about this relationship with Nathan. How do you know Nathan, and how did this collaboration begin?
Well, let me see. We were talking about this the other day a little bit. We sort of met the first time about, I think maybe around 2000, what was that, 16 something? Yeah, maybe 5 years, I want to say, when Nathan was playing with Steve Gunn in his band, and they were playing in Milwaukee. And I was on the bill also.
Oh, okay.
There was, I think there's three groups. I was playing solo on the bill and had met Steve maybe once, and we met that night, right, Nathan? Yeah, we met that night. So we were just talking, and then a good long while went by, and then 2018, when the Cropped Out Festival, if you've heard of that, which is this
I have
great
heard of
festival,
that. Yeah.
Yeah, down by Louisville.
Yeah.
We were both being tapped sort of for like solo sets there. And they ended up being short, and they had, you know, barely one set left open. And so they approached both of us, said, how do you guys feel about doing a set together? You know, and I thought that was really interesting idea. And, you know, I was already into Nathan's music, and I thought we had a simpatico as far as, like, you know, portions of each of what we do. And then Nathan, you know, we both agreed to do it. And it kind of was like that, you know, and we basically sort of started sharing tracks, songs, a couple ideas to do at the set. And the only time we played before that set was on site about, what, an hour before? I think we did about...
Yeah, something like that.
So it was like an hour rehearsal.
It wasn't meant to be a set where you compartmentalize your own music. You were meant to be kind of immersed in one another, playing together, jamming, if you will. I don't know if you have a negative connotation with the word jamming, either of you.
But
were you?
No, I think Bob Marley set jamming as a cool thing from his song onward.
he was just designated what they were doing, just for everyone's benefit. That's, by the way,
right.
We're jamming. That's what Bob was after there. Nathan, does that ring true? Nathan, does that ring true with your recollection of how? So you met 2016, it sounds like Bill said. And then 2 years later, you're on stage together jamming?
Yeah, I think that, yeah. I can't remember the exact time when that show was in Milwaukee. But yeah, it was I was drumming with Steve Gunn's
band. That's right, you're drumming.
That was my kind of central drumming gig for, you know, a few years, more than a few years, kind of on and off. We made records and did a fair amount of touring. But yeah, that was where I met Bill in person for the first time. The first time I saw him perform, I remember being really struck by kind of the like variety and like confidence of the solo set.
Yeah.
I just thought it was amazing. And we just like talked a bunch that night, just hung very casually. And then yeah, that's totally the cropped out thing that really appeals to my improvisational nature, is to get, you know, when someone says like, how about you just try this thing? And just knowing Bill's music and knowing him as his personality, it just felt that felt like such a good idea so quickly. Like I remember thinking like, I don't even have to consider this. That's an immediate yes. I think this would be super fun.
Nice.
Likewise.
And I liked the, aw, thanks Bill. And yeah,
totally.
It
was immediate.
I really liked the fact that, you know, we were sending ideas back and forth over email, but yeah, I really liked the fact that we were just going to do it on the fly apart from, you know, warming up a little bit before.
Oh,
playing.
So
and I have really, really fond memories of that set. It felt really magical.
So sorry, Bill, just so I can clarify things, were you told on site at the festival that this was going to happen, or were you emailed in advance ahead of the festival? I'm just trying to clarify that.
Oh, we knew ahead of the festival.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Sorry.
We knew.
I was breezing by with my narrative. So yeah, we knew ahead, so we knew how to prepare in that way. But yeah, I also was, yeah, had just a great, I thought our vibes were great. It was a great audience, and have really fond memories as well. And I think one of the things that happens too, when you know, sometimes when you have such a little time to prepare, there's a weird confidence in there too, as long as you go forth and step into it, right?
Because yeah,
you're like, what can you,
what is nothing?
You didn't have any,
yeah, yeah.
There's nothing to lose.
Nothing
right?
to lose.
And, yeah,
no expectations.
And,
yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, you can't hope to do anything more than what with the little time you had. So,
right.
Yeah, and then that just set things off, I think, for what we're doing now as well. You know, it was a great start to that, where the music's gone.
So the,
you know,
the,
since then,
the configuration on this album keys, I think there's overdubs. Is that correct? But is it primarily you on guitar, Bill, and as Nathan's playing banjo? Is that how most of these songs came to be, Bill?
Yeah, it is. That's the basis, I would say, of them. I think almost without a fault, without an exception.
Yes.
They're built on that.
There might
I'm
be some
learning
fault.
It.
Yeah.
Still learning.
Funny, no, there's faults for sure. But without exception, yeah, I think it was. We basically, all the tracks are built around Bill and I being like knee to knee, playing banjo and guitar at the same time.
Yeah.
So at the
still learning. Still learning your language, Mish.
I always forget what planet you're from, Bill, and I'll make a note of it next time. No, you're doing well. Doing well.
Mastering Canadian takes a long time.
Canadian. That's right. That's right. So just to clarify again, because there's so much going on here in terms of what you play, how you work together, that Cropped Out Festival, I mean, Nathan, you were there ostensibly to play drums. Was the setup with Bill to be a drum guitar thing, or were you actually armed with your banjo? or necked?
Oh,
were you
yeah,
necked,
no, I wasn't.
Necked with your banjo. I'm sorry. I don't know the terminology.
Yeah, no, I wasn't playing with anyone. I wasn't playing drums with anyone else there. Like when I originally was going to be asked, or when it seemed like I was just going to do a solo set, I was just going to do my solo banjo set. So there was never any plans of me like taking drums or anything.
It's probably best that I clarified this because you mentioned playing with Steve Gunn, who's a noteworthy figure. I should say, what was that like? You played with him for many years, it sounds like. Was that a great experience?
Yeah, Steve and I have been friends for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, absolutely formative experience, both in terms of the collaborative studio work we were doing, especially with Jason Marr at Black Dirt Studio, where we made bunch of those records that I played on, and then we did just a lot of touring. A lot of my touring experience is with Steve. Yeah, and that was in terms of drumming. I guess that's my most substantive sort of recording and gigging out work. I mean, I've done in the last couple of years. I was drumming with another good friend of mine, Joan Shelley, and Nathan Salzberg, touring with them. But the drumming with Steve was. Yeah, years-long kind of project there for a while.
Okay, cool. Okay, well, let's return back. Thanks for that insight, and I appreciate that. And it sounds like this was all kind of fortuitous in a sense, Bill. Like, this just kind of came to be because of this situation at this festival on some level. Is that fair?
I think on some level, you know, being that we also have belong to, I guess, what I'd call these overlapping converging circles of musicians and music, you know, I imagine that there would have possibly been, you know, any number of other points where we met and played. I think that's not too much of a stretch to say, but it was definitely a potent launching pad, you know, that we, in my case, you know, I definitely felt like, oh yeah, we can do more, you know, I see what we can do with this intuition and natural chemistry and not much preparation, and just good intentions, good vibrations. And so it seemed like that way was a precursor, you know?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah, now, that makes sense.
Nathan mentioned his penchant for improvisation. And my understanding of Keys, by the way, beautiful record. Thank you for making it. It's lovely. I just wanted to say that now that we're half an hour in and I've yelled at one of you at least once and tried to make you laugh a couple times. I'm doing my best, but it is a beautiful record. And
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
You're welcome. Based. You're welcome. Now, my understanding is there are 8 original compositions and 2 songs by others, and I want to get into that in a little bit too. But following what I was saying, how much of the originals are improvised? How much of them stem from just knee-to-knee, looking at each other and seeing where the other one goes. Nathan, do you want to feel that? Is this an improvisation exercise on some level, or was this rather thought out before you hit record, so to speak?
That's a great question. It kind of depends on the song, I guess. I mean, I would say no matter how through, I'll speak mostly for myself, but somewhat for Bill, I think, is that no matter, stop me at any time if you want, but I think no matter how through composed a piece from either of us is, there's always, even as through composed as it's going to be, there's always an improvisational nature to any of the playing, any of the recording. I mean, generally, if it was like a composed song, we had kind of parts of like an order and little cues to each other. And then in the case of the songs that are titled Dry Rations, those are 2 kind of edits from a longer, just freely improvised piece that we were just recording in the moment.
Yeah, there's Dry Rations 1 and 2, is that right? And I believe, do they appear in non-sequential order? Does Dry Rations 2 occurs before Dry Rations 1 somehow in this weird...
Yes.
I know Bill was saying English is first language on some level, or Canadian, I should say. But explain to Canadians why you would flip the order. Normally we get 1, then later on we get 2, but you guys all over the road here with this, why is that the case? Bill, what's going on with that? Bill, what's happening with the sequencing? Is it an error? What happened?
Oh my gosh, we're getting deep into this.
We're in deep.
Conundrums here, our twisted process. I think what happened was, I remember, I think if I'm remembering correctly, I did the edit on that and cut it in 2 that I thought sounded like good spots. Just seemed like it'd be nice to have those in sections. And I don't know now if it was if it was just that the other order of the songs was taking shape already, it may have been that, and that we put these here and there, or it was just that this sounds like more of an early part in the record thing. You know, we're going to have to, we could have. And then I suppose there was a little bit of being clever, leaving them that numbered. We could have numbered them opposite.
Yeah, you
right?
could have just changed the number.
But it was also, you can do that, right?
You can do whatever you want.
Yeah, so we can have total free. I mean, I think, it's like, you know, Bill, I think that sounds right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it was nice to also, actually going back on that, I think I liked the idea of letting people actually know what the order of those sections had actually been.
Right,
you know?
Right.
Whether, and now most people looking would probably say, well, okay, well, yeah, they could have changed the numbers because one was probably just recorded another day than the other, or, you know, they were sequential. But yeah, it just seemed to make sense. No, I like this discussion.
I feel like I've made too much of this. And also, I feel like when we count down, a rocket ship is going to blast off into space by the end of it. So I feel like the record is going to launch. We've started at two, then we buy one. It's gone. It's in outer space. Is that? I'm just trying to connect Canada to wherever you're from, Bill. Is that maybe what's going on? Because you're an alien? That was by callback. Not. It was clumsy. Clumsy callback. Yeah. Sorry about that. No,
it landed. It landed. Just keep the metaphors going. It landed.
Nice. Yes. Nice. No, it's that's interesting in itself. So do we get at
it
the
made sense that way?
So the dry rations is exemplary of an improvisation. Is that where we also landed? Is that what you were kind of that you sort
I
of?
I mean, it was.
But it also had a bit of a. It was, but it also had a bit of. If you remember, Nathan, the you did come up with sort of a series of notes, like the sort of five notes that occasionally appear, rippling mm-hmm. glissando, if you will.
Yeah, and I will
like that. I will have. I'll have two rippling like glissandos, please. I'd like two. Yeah,
if,
no.
If you please would, I would like that.
Okay, so there is a. It sounds like it's a mix of through composition and improvisation. Generally, is that fair, Nathan?
I mean, I would say. I guess there's more. You know, if like on the record where it's the song credit gets like a composer credit, that person generally like quote unquote wrote the song, like came up with the melody, the arrangement, and then introduced it to the other person, the chords, and then we would kind of rehearse it together and come up with like, all right. And again, these were all tracked generally. The basic tracking was, you know, us sitting knee to knee and just tracking it, banjo and guitar, and coming up with the arrangement, and then we listen back to it and think like, is this good as is? And I think there's some tracks where we just did that and said like, maybe even on Honey Time, I think that's just it, just the guitar and banjo, and we thought, oh, that sounds pretty good.
Yeah,
nothing over no overdubs is what you're getting at there.
Yeah, the Beaufort dubs. Yeah, and I think the other thing is, I guess you can sort of tell in this that through whether it's through composed or not, I guess, which is saying that every note would be scripted. No, but as a folk approach, to songwriting, we had, like Nathan said, a bunch of them are a really set song, melody and chords, but then there's maybe a solo or an intro or an outro, things like that, you know, that are more free. So it ranges around.
Yeah.
The last like third of Joyride is just improvised.
I feel like. Okay.
Oh, that's what. Yes, you're right. The outros like that were just real, really free. Yeah.
So, I guess I'm just curious about what compels both of you to approach a record this way. It's not. It's on some level, you know, it's not that out of this world. Another callback to incorporate, you know, improvisation and some composition when you're working together. But even this interplay, Bill, like a banjo guitar dynamic like this one, for some of us it calls back to folk. For some of us it might call back to bluegrass. It's not that unusual, but it's 2021. It's maybe a bit more unusual for people of your vintage and mine to be making music like this on some level, I will say. What were you kind of hearkening back to, if you will, in setting up this way, Bill? I'm just curious. Were you? Is it an homage? Sometimes when you get into traditional music, you're invariably and unconsciously even maybe paying homage to those who came before you. And I just wonder if you're like, oh, this could be a nice little tribute to this sound via such and such or so and so. Did you have people in mind or certain elements of the tradition in mind when you got together with Nathan?
You know, not really an homage to people per se or players, although I could, you know, certainly list scores, you know, that have influenced me in different ways for many genres and stuff. So, but I thought of it as sort of what it felt like to me was just a picture of the times that we're in or something. You know, it's optimistic and it's bright and it's haunted to me too in beautiful way. You know, it's got a stirring feeling to it. And there's, you know, references to the struggles, you know, and suffering and overcoming too. I don't know. There's parts that have seemed triumphant to me in a way. And so I was thinking of it just in those terms and not really referencing anything exactly. I think I was really open in my mind to what me and Nathan might come up with and that it might, you know, have gone several directions.
Right.
So I thought that was interesting, you know, and it was nice to going into it with him knowing that we could do that. And I think on some of the things, hopefully people will pick that up a little bit, you know, like there's a very Idumea being this very old song, but there's a very spooky, weird underlaying organ that Nathan did.
Yeah.
That lends it a really unsettling vibe a little bit. And it's very subtle. And that's not, you know, something that I imagine might have appeared on other renditions of that song.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So there's various touches like that that I think push it into modernism in a way that to me bridges that whole gap, you know, from something really modern to these touchstones, traditional touchstones.
Yeah.
You know?
Appreciate that. So that's well,
that's exciting for me.
Yeah. And when you mentioned that, yeah, the record is, I said it was beautiful earlier, but it was haunting. It was like a beautiful ghost. The record on some level. It's alluring, but I'm also like, what is happening right here? Nathan, can you also field that?
That's great.
Rather long question I posed. Do you remember it? I know it was a while ago now and I said a lot of things, but do you, can you speak to where I was coming from?
Yeah, no, I think I remember what you, I mean, I didn't approach. So yeah, you mentioned earlier. So there's two songs on the record that are written by others or quote-unquote seen as like part of the traditional songbook.
Yeah.
And I brought both of those to the table, not sort of explicitly because I wanted to connect to a specific tradition, but I think I'm interested in that tradition for a lot of different reasons. And they were both songs I was kind of just working on by myself or thinking of like, what is a way that I could bring my own voice to the song. Idumea first, that had been something I'd been kind of playing around with based on this Watterson's vocals a cappella version of the tune that I've been kind of obsessed with for years. And then I See God, I feel like came later. I feel like I sort of had the aha moment about that tune kind of like almost right before the session, or not right before, but like not too long before we got together. And I guess, the record doesn't sound to me like a traditional music record.
No, it's just more the foundational instrumentation, if you will.
Sure, of course.
It speaks to a history of folk music. I think that's fair to say. But yes.
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely.
And
then.
And the way you've augmented it with other instrumentation. I mean, there's no drum machines or, you know, turntable scratches or something bizarre. Like it's all... To me, it's all all the augmentation, the overdubs. We've got, what do we have here? Piano, percussion, pump organ, electric organ. I'm not familiar with this. What is that?
Oh, that's a little small guitar-like instrument that a friend from Mexico made. And it's...
Requinto?
Many of the requintos.
Requinto. Requinto.
Okay. Requinto. Yeah, requinto. Many of them look like guitars when you see them, but the ones I really like and the one I have are, they look much more... rustic and like a different kind of folk instrument unto its own. It's a 5-string.
Oh, okay.
Very small. Yeah, if I have it around,
you seem to be looking. You're looking
point.
Around, Bill. You're looking around your room.
I'm searching. Yeah, I'm rustling through my den.
I see a maraca and a jar. I don't know what I don't know what's in the jar. I don't know if that's an instrument.
That's something I would play. I would.
Yeah, exactly. That me too. Oh, there we go. He's getting it out of his. Just for those listening, Bill is going into a guitar case or a requinto case.
Now maybe this is silly because we're not. This is not.
No, it's fine
for the rest of us. But it might be fun.
Yes,
it's this basically. So if you can hear it on the recording.
Oh.
And it's got the... Oh, I see. It's all gone. The strings have all gone loose on me over the winter, but... Anyway, it's very out of tune, but it's just this lovely thing.
Well, that was lovely. So even out of tune, that was lovely. And thank you for the show and tell. That's wonderful. Yeah, I do recognize that instrument. I wasn't familiar with that term, requinto, but I do recognize that instrument. Yeah. Yeah, very lovely.
Oh, sure. Yeah. There are a number of them around.
Joking about the playing the water jar reminded me. I did a tour with some friends once where I was sitting in on their set every night on percussion, and there was a song where I would play like Tumblr, the last Tumblr.
Oh, like a excellent
rosary. Yeah. Rosary on glass Tumblr, I think
is what I was. Well, it happens sometimes. I used to have to play practice in a house where we had to play the drums so quiet that I only played with chopsticks, just whatever was in the drawer. And and then when I had to play shows, I'm like, I kind of miss the chopsticks. I developed a feel for these skinny little sticks.
Sure. And, I think I read that Sonny Murray would play with knitting needles.
Oh, knitting needles. Yeah, there you go.
Is that right?
Yeah. It's interesting. Wow. Yeah. That's fascinating. Well, there's also songs with vocals that I wanted to get to that too. And I appreciate, again, the show and tell there. To my ear, Bill, are you singing for the most part or at all? I don't want to mischaracterize things.
There's a third of the album is vocal, or three of ten.
Yes,
a little less
that's
than
right.
A third.
Yeah.
So I sing on two, and then me and Nathan sing on one of them.
Right.
On the third.
Do you want to identify? Yeah. Do you want to identify which of those are?
Nathan and I are duetting on I See God, and then Truth and Late for Your Funeral Again are just me solo.
And singing. these are original words of yours or?
Those two are in I See God, as I think you mentioned, is EC Ball song.
Right.
But yeah, the other ones are mine.
Okay, so I just...
Originals.
What compelled you to add vocals to three of ten songs? I guess I'm curious if you went in thinking this was going to be an instrumental exercise, but then something struck you. Because Late for Your Funeral Again is funny, but it's also not. It's haunting and alluring and funny, but and sad on a level as well. So I'm just curious about I delved into the song content first after, but let's get to the vocalizations. What compelled you to sing on three songs as opposed to 10 or none? What was that decision-making process like for you, Bill?
Well, I think if I remember, another thing that was cool, I guess, was about our overall approach together is I felt like it was really open about, you know, what we would do in that way. And I know we've probably touched on this in the previous talk that we had. But, you know, I've always for a long time given so little weight to those differences between like vocal and instrumental and the different genres, you know, just kind of preferring to headlong go into these things and draw together and combine and. Yeah. And all of that. So what I remember is I had those four tunes, and then two of them just happened to be vocal and two were instrumental. And but they seemed like they fit together. And then they seemed like those fit together with Nathan's stuff that he'd shared and the ones we were kind of doing together, you know, that we eventually got to together. Hmm. And the improvs, like our overall aesthetic together, it all seemed to fit, you know. It seemed to cohere as a body of armor, a suit of armor.
Suit of armor.
and
the word of the day is arm.
Right. We must clothe the night.
I'm surprised your requinto wasn't resting in an armoire or something. I'm just going to keep going. Sorry.
Please do. So if that makes any sense, you know, it was really a sort of an unconscious kind of set of choices that led to this. And when I listen to the record now, I think it seems like just... the proportions seem right to me.
Yeah,
you know, between these things.
So it's tonal.
So I hope that's
That's fair. Like it just those songs felt tonally appropriate for these arrangements, if you will.
Oh, that's great. I will.
Okay. Well put. That was you got me there. I didn't
that
know
was
where
a return. I got you.
You got me back. Nathan, earlier, Bill had mentioned that he felt like this music. And maybe these lyrics even were appropriate for the time. And that begs the question, like, when did you guys make this record? When Bill says that, and I can't help it, my reflex is to be like, oh, you mean the pandemic time, the racial strife time, the economic disparity time, which time? All of that is happening at once. So let me go back to my original question, though. Mm-hmm. Nathan, when did you get together to put this record together?
Yeah, so the first, I guess this was sort of made in sort of two trips that I made to Chicago, both pretty close to one another. So I flew, the first trip I flew to Chicago New Year's Day 2020, right? Last year. And we did a session then and played a show or two in Chicago, and then basically did that again in February. Flew there and we did the rest of the tracking and mixing and played a few more shows. And then I can remember, Bill, very clearly, you and I and Nick, Nick Brosi, who engineered and mixed the record, out on that balcony and talking about, like, everything you mentioned.
Yeah.
And then also kind of the creeping specter of COVID as it. And I remember even thinking then just how there was an impending storm, there was already storm clouds going on, sort of whipping around our head that we were talking about. And then this other storm, it just felt, I remember flying home, I guess maybe March 1st or somewhere around there, and feeling like, I don't know when I'm going to see Bill again. Like, I remember feeling that way.
And yeah.
It's why, I mean, I'm really thankful that we were able to get together and track this and collaborate in this way before all the COVID stuff got really intense in the US last year, which is pretty, and that all, you know, went down,
yeah,
you know, right after I got home pretty much.
So in a weird way, it might have been,
yeah,
it keeps happening on the show. I suggest that music made around this time period is prescient or may come across as prescient. Do you feel that way, Bill? Like, do you feel like Nathan's saying these storm clouds are hovering? Does it give you an eerie feeling to think on these songs, how they were made, when they were made?
It's funny to think about, I guess, mostly because we're still in this weird, you know, maybe not as haunted, but we're still in this era of so much tumult, you know? Mm-hmm. And then I listen to it now and it definitely seems resonant with me and goes along with it, you know? So I think I'm thinking that it'll, in the near future or down the line a little bit, it will remind me of that more, you know, whereas now we're still in it. So it just seems to resonate and sit inside of this weird era, you know, and, but I'm glad that it does resonate because it seems very true in that way to me. I sometimes have one of my gripes with certain kinds of things these days is that sometimes you hear things or read things and you feel like there's no sense of like what we're going through, or there's nothing really grounding you in anybody's real reality or something like that. Yeah. You know, I don't know. That's a slippery slope, I know, because I like lots of fantasia and I like, you know, surreal things that, you know, people might say are abstracted from reality, but it's just a feeling a little bit. So I'm glad that we touched on something that we weren't sort of like just doing something sort of superficial. I think we let all those feelings in there somehow, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that we let the subterranean stuff rise up into it. And so, I'm really pleased. This is one I've heard a lot and I still enjoy it every time, you know?
Yeah. No,
so it's always a great sign.
Yeah. As I said, it is lovely. Yeah. So Nathan, you said, you know, you didn't know when you were flying home on March 1st of 2020, you didn't know when you might see Bill again. I don't know how many times you've seen each other since. This album, Keys, is out April 9th, I believe, on Drag City, right?
Yeah.
April 9th, yeah.
So, Nathan, I asked this question of my guests. It's very hard to get a fixed response, and I accept that. But what are your future plans? how do you plan to potentially celebrate the album's release with Bill beyond hanging out with me? Do you have plans to somehow perform together remotely or get together and try to put something together for virtual or live performance of some kind? Any plans yet?
Right. Well, so you asked me, have I seen Bill since?
I did, yeah, I guess I did. Yeah.
So I haven't.
You have not. No, this is it. Zoom, this is it. Whatever.
Yeah, it feels right.
And that feels wild to, I mean, because I've known that, but it's wild to say it out loud again and reflect on that.
So
it's funny, Bill and I got together on Zoom the other day and we were kind of trying to troubleshoot, like, is it possible to like jam over Zoom?
Right.
Or, like, how possible is it? And we like messing with it and just, we couldn't get it to feel, you know, and for me, it's, you know, here in Durham, my last record under my own name, I've been the last few years playing with a trio of my friends, Rex McMurray and Casey Toll on drum kit and upright bass. And I'm doing like amped banjo. And up until March of last year, we were rehearsing quite a lot and working on new material. And, you know, I haven't been in the rehearsal space with them since, you know, March. We see each other out on walks and whatnot. And,
wow.
It's a wild feeling to not be able to, I mean, that's changing. That's, you know, we're getting to the point where we're going to be able to rehearse again soon, but yeah, I haven't seen, it's wild. Anyway, I just went on that tangent because it's hard. Yeah. Trying to play with each other remotely proved to be like very, very difficult.
Yeah.
So, you know, our plans right now, Bill and I talk every now and then about like, all right, what are our possibilities? And it'd be nice if, you know, this spring or summer, we could do some outdoor gigs, maybe here in my neck of the woods. Cause you know, all the gigs we've played have been either cropped out or around Bill in Chicago.
Yeah.
So we're looking into options on that. In terms of like release day stuff, I think we're doing that Hideout interview on the release day, right, Bill?
Yeah. It'll be, almost would be your counterpart here, Vish, a little bit. Maybe
this is based around the venue, the Hideout in Chicago.
It is. Yeah. Do you know Lawrence Peters?
I don't know that. I've been to the Hideout.
Yeah.
That same tour I was alluding to in 2000, the band I was.
You were there.
We played the Hideout, and then I was last there for the Touch and Go anniversary party in like 2006 or something like that. I haven't been there in a while, but yeah, I just to prove that I can relate to what you're talking about, I have been there.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that because.
But I don't. I've seen stuff about them doing some interviews. They have a show, a podcast, or something. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. They're keeping up. You know, they're keeping on as best they can with different events and things, and doing, you know, different sort of live shows. Some of it has been like just on their stage with no people. Other has been like this, you know, online. Podcasted or whatever shows.
Yeah.
Lawrence Peters. Yeah. He's has a nice show, his happy hour, he calls it. And yeah, it's very similar to what we're doing now. And it's live. And I think we talked for about an hour on, what was that again? April 9th. On the 9th.
The day.
I think it's on release day. Yeah.
It's on the release day. Okay.
Exactly. On the 9th. So, and he's a lot of fun, and spins a lot of country. He has a massive collection of country music.
Oh, cool.
And other stuff, but that's like a real area specialty of his. So that sometimes plays into the show, or he spins other stuff. But
oh, cool.
We're gonna be,
okay.
So this is, yeah.
That's one thing.
We've got several of those, don't we? Yeah, we have a few more interviews.
We have a few interviews
coming up.
But it's so weird to not. Bill and I have released many records, you know, and. It feels weird to say that as I think back on records I've worked on and released, but I guess it's true. And yeah, you just get so used to, and you want, you know, I desperately miss playing, playing with people in a room. And like I said, we're about to get to the point where, you know, me and my bandmates here can do that. And, you know, and hopefully me and Bill can do that sooner rather than later this year in each other's company. And, I don't know. I would love to be able to play with Bill in the next, you know, sometime this summer.
Yeah, I hope we can do it too. I would love it as well. And also to see about, you know, possibly doing some other more extended touring, you know. I've wanted to come
absolutely
play in Canada again for a while too, and play some like the Calgary Folk Festival, different festivals. And, you know, I had so much fun last time I was there in 2019. I was playing solo, supporting Steve Gunn, actually.
Oh, wow.
Steve,
there you
again.
Go.
Yeah. And in Montreal and Toronto, and those were just some of the funnest shows, you know. And it felt refreshing. It feels great to go out of your fishbowl too, and even just the slight sort of differences that audiences have around around the world, you know, if you go to play Canada, go to Mexico or anywhere.
Yeah. Well, obviously here in Alberta now, and basically isolated since we arrived because of the pandemic, we would love to see you here. If I might say, I you know, at one of the festivals or whatnot, so please keep me in the loop. I'll sign up for your mailing list, whatever I got to do.
Absolutely.
To know when that is happening, I'm happy to do it. By the sounds of it, I feel like I know the answer to this question.
Absolutely.
I feel like I know the answer to this question, but Nathan, is it safe to assume that you and Bill would like to try to make more songs together, potentially work together again on another record?
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be amazing. Yeah, of course.
Difficult to foresee.
Yeah, likewise.
Difficult to imagine. Yeah. That happening in the current climate I'm gathering, like you I can see it in your eyes, Nathan, just like, of course I would love to do that, but like, can we do that? Like, I haven't even seen the guy in over a year. I'm sure that's
We have a good, you know, I guess we have an okay track record of winging it, so
yes,
we don't
that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. It might be that one weekend we can, you know, somehow meet in the middle somewhere.
Sure. And
bring the equipment with us.
Well, I know we'd all love to see and hear more from you. So the record Keys is out April 9th. Oh, you're welcome. The record's out April 9th on Drag City. So I assume people can go to dragcity.com probably, if that's the URL. I think it is off the top of my head. And
Is
there anywhere else, Bill, is there anywhere else you'd like to send people to kind of follow you, keep tabs on your work?
Oh yeah. I mean, I always have just my, you know, again, it's not many gigs to post on it per se lately. Just like BillMcKay.com, I always maintain that site and I post stuff and, you know, links to all records and all things there. And, and then Keys is kind of, you know, we all have the Drag City and Nathan and my Bandcamp pages all have links to it.
Yeah.
To that record too. So,
okay, cool.
Just BillMcKay.com is a great place for me. And once the shows start us, if they, you know, start up again, then I always send those to Drag City too. So on their site, my page on their site will have that stuff too.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So you're on the internet. We figured that out. That's good. You're on the internet. We know that. Active on Instagram and things as well, as far as I know, Twitter. You like all these things, I think.
Active on these. As much as however I feel about them, I use them religiously.
Exactly. Yeah. Nathan, same question for you, Nathan. If people want to kind of keep track of you and your work, is there anywhere you'd send them? Want to send them?
Generally, yeah. I try to keep up with some sense of social media. So like Twitter and Instagram, Facebook, I guess, to a lesser extent. But yeah, on Twitter, I'm at Spiral Galaxies. And on Instagram, I'm Pig Ankle Strut.
Super easy to remember. These are easy
super
to remember.
Easy to remember.
Yeah, good branding. Yeah. Good branding there.
Good branding. Good branding. Yeah, no, it's whenever I'm on the phone with someone, like I'm on the phone with like some bureaucratic thing and they go, okay, so do you want a receipt sent to your email? Yeah, sure. Okay. What's your email? Okay. It's Pig, P-I-G, Pig as in oink, oink, Ankle, A-N-K-L-E, Strut. And like, you know, the person on the other end is just like, oh,
that is amazing.
Yeah, I'm not sure I want to send
oh
this
my
guy
god
a
okay
but you can find me, you know, just search Nathan Balls.
You think we can find you? No one's going to remember what you just said. No one's going to be able to find you with that information, but I'll try to link to it.
That's part of the game. And we've been doing, you know, some singles from the record, so you can listen to like Joyride and I See God, and I with the help of Dan at Drag City, kind of edited and assembled a little video for Dousing the other day. So,
great.
Check that out.
Okay. Well, that's a good segue. I like to conclude conversations by asking my guest to select a song from the album we've been talking about to go out on. And there's two of you, so I got a bit of a conundrum here, but I'm going to go with, because he's still learning English, let's go with Bill. Or a Canadian. He's learning Canadian, I should say. We'll go with Bill. And Nathan, if you object to his selection, please speak out. But Bill, if you can pick a song from Keys that for us to go out on and maybe explain why you chose it, that would be lovely. Can you do that, please?
Yeah, sure. Are we let me just say, they have a mini conference in front with you involved, too, yes. with Nathan, yes. about, I just have to do that because I'm thinking if there was anything about like not doing any song, can we pick any song? Do you have access to all 10?
I have everything I got to, in order to prepare for my conversations, I insist on all of the assets. I've had the record for a long time. I was actually going through my library. I have like a music library, and when I upload or download, whatever the word is, when I put them in the library, they, the records pile on. And to find yours the other day, I was like, where is it? It's new. There's so much music. It was down. I've had it for months, I think. So I do have it, and I've been listening to it. I hope I didn't come across as someone who had never heard your music. Good Lord. Anyway, my point
absolutely
is...
absolutely not.
Okay, good.
No, I've always thought of you as very comprehensive.
I try. I try.
And someone who demands all access, full access.
I'm not some sort of evil person, just greedy. If you're going to get me to read your... You know, talk to the author.
Yeah.
Listen to the album. I have to read the book and listen to the album or watch
the
movie.
Send the whole book.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Don't just send a chapter or two. Send the whole book.
I get this a lot. Like, people say, thank you for actually reading the book. Thank you for actually listening to the album. And I say, well, what are the other people doing? They're like, not that. They don't do it.
Yeah.
I'm like,
isn't that amazing?
Well, it's sort of strange. Anyway.
It is strange.
Yeah. Very
strange.
Yes, I have access. Go ahead. Go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry, Vish. You finish.
No.
You do have access.
No. I was, okay, yeah. I'm hoping you can pick a song, and whatever you choose is fine by me.
Okay. Well, how about, we have our latest single, which is one of Nathan's songs called Dowsing. And that's our latest single. So why don't we do that? Because that's fresh off the griddle this week, I think.
Okay.
It came out a week ago, maybe.
Okay. Well, I want to go to Nathan then just because it is his composition. Nathan, do you want to say anything about Dowsing before we hear it?
Oh, yeah. This was one I was writing, I think, kind of another, maybe one of the last ones I wrote before the session, I feel like. And yeah, this is one of those ones that feels pretty contemplative, I guess, and maybe feels like it is indicative of the mood of the album as a whole. It's got a little bit of melancholy and a little bit of hopefulness and a little bit of mystery in it. And it was this was really fun to track and to arrange on the fly. I remember really feeling creatively inspired in the studio with Bill and Nick, kind of working on putting the track together and coming up with the arrangement. So it's fun for me to listen back, and it takes me back to that time. And
Well, that was well said. We'll hear it now. This is Dowsing by Bill McKay and Nathan Bowles from their new album Keys. Nathan, Bill, thank you so much for this time and for making this music, and I hope we speak again soon. Best of luck with everything in the future.
Thank you, Vish.
Thanks so much, Vish.
Yeah, wonderful talking with you. Good to see you again. Thank you.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Very special thanks again to Bill McKay and Nathan Bowles for appearing on this, the 607th episode of Creative Control, which is part of the Entertainment One podcast network and is available wherever you get your podcasts. If you can't find an episode you're looking for, or if you wish to learn more about me and sign up for my monthly newsletter, please visit my website, vishkana.com. You can like Creative Control on Facebook, follow the show on Twitter at vishcreative, or follow me on Twitter and on Instagram if you like. At Vishkana, just at Vishkana, that's me. Also, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation to sustain the show. $6 or more grants you access to exclusive content, and if you're interested in receiving a Creative Control t-shirt, just message me on Patreon and I'll get you one while supplies last. Just send me your size and whether you want a red one with my giant head on it or a yellow one with the name of the show spelled out in slices of pizza. I have a bit of a weakness for the pizza. Anyway, all the information you will need is at patreon.com/creativecontrol. Thanks again to the fine Alberta record retailer Blackbird Music, which you can learn more about and place special orders at via blackbird.ca. Also live at MasseyHall.com, where you can watch beautifully captured concerts by great Canadian artists. And also to Pizza Trocadero, the bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in my hometown, I guess, of Guelph. I wasn't born there or raised there, but I kind of came of age. I was lived in Guelph for 23 years. That's most of my life. So I feel like Guelph's my town, you know? Even though I'm in Edmonton now, Guelph is like my town. Those are three amazing retailers. They make pizza, they sell books, and host movies. I mean, they could in the best of times. And they sell coffee. They're great. I love them all. And also Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, a wonderful donut store. I love that place. All the links to those places, by the way, should be in the podcast post that you're accessing to hear in the show. Anyway, I love them all. And those retailers provide in-kind support for the show. So thank you very much. I'd like to thank Jim Guthrie for letting me use music of his on the show. You can learn more about him and his work at jimguthrie.org. And finally, you. Thank you very much for listening to this episode with Bill and Nathan. I hope you enjoyed it. Please consider subscribing to this podcast, maybe telling your friends about it. Maybe they'll subscribe to it and listen to it as well. Spread the word. That would be great. Otherwise, I'll be back with you soon, I hope. And I hope you stay well. And that's all. That's all I got for now. Talk to you soon. Bye for now.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.